Hi, good evening, and welcome back to Another Hard Truth with myself, David Vance, and Alana Mercer.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm very well, Alana. How are you?
Except for internet uploading issues, I'm fine.
Yeah, I know. Technology, when it works, Alana, is wonderful. When it doesn't work, it's hell on earth. As I can attest, in the past 24 hours, I've had my own issues on emails. So listen, it's just what happens. But anyway, I suppose there's a few things we should say before we bring our special guest into the studio. First thing I think we want to say is want to thank everyone who watched our last Hard Truth from last week. Lots of good numbers there. And thank you all on the Rumbles for watching us. But we are now, in addition to being on Rumble, we've now also set up shop on Odyssey. And there is a link below. For the links below, and if you want to subscribe, you go up, you go above where Alana and I are sitting to go to.
Yes, Odyssey. I keep doing this.
Well, I think that's okay for Rumble, but
forgot we're banned on YouTube, I guess.
well, we're not banned on YouTube, but YouTube, you know, you can't talk about any hard truths.
No.
Pissy fit and fall over and collapse. So that's the issue with us. But anyway, Alana, we are, and of course on our podcast channel as well, a thank you to all of those who listen to us on podcast, and make sure, by the way, you're subscribing to that as well. So,
okay, so let's introduce Jack Kerouac. Earned his doctorate in philosophy from Temple University. His area of specialization is ethics and political philosophy, with a particular interest in classical conservatism and decimating the GOP. His work has appeared in both scholarly journals and popular publications. He has authored at least 4 books that I'm aware of, and he has been teaching philosophy in various institutions. The last is Rowan College. So let's bring Jack in and say hi.
Yep. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the stream.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sorry you had to wait so long. So reading your latest, Jack, the description of the Republican racket, which you've been plugging at for quite a while, as have I, but you've added some very interesting twists to the whole landscape. I had this vision as I was reading it on American Greatness, where you can find Jack's work. Have we got Jack's books up on Amazon? Yeah. Okay. I had the impression, I had this vision of a national bipolar mood disorder. You know, we swing between these lows when the GOP is in power, it's a low. When the Dems are in power, it's a low. And there's absolutely no reprieve in sight. But something huge has happened, and you and I have spoken about it a lot during the past years, and I think it's a sea change. It's not hyperbolic to say, to quote the great Naomi Wolf, who says that we are living under emergency law, the Constitution has been suspended, right, and we're at a civilizational crossroads. And I think you and I probably, maybe not David, will concede that the Republic has long been lost, right? Other than the obscenity at the southern border, I think it began proper with COVID. But the Democrats set the terms of the debate, and the GOP merely fits in, right?
Correct.
When the Democrats are in power, it's, you know, treason, impeachment proceedings, demonstration, rioting, looting, what have you, you know. They do have the proverbial mail bits, don't they?
Right.
We know how the Democrats deal with Republicans in power. There's the surveillance state, the police state, arrests, absolute delegitimization of the president and of deplorables. But how does the Republican cohort deal with the Democrats in power?
Well, they don't. And that's exactly...
Don't be smart, Alec. Elaborate.
Well, that's exactly right. Lon and I have been having friends for a while, and so we've talked offline about this stuff, David. And the bottom line is, especially over the last 2 years, as she mentioned, during the COVID era, you know, it just became impossible anymore for me to avoid, I think, just a conclusion to which I've been moving more gradually over the last several years. And that is that the GOP and what I call the big con, meaning the overall big conservative media, is essentially just a looting operation. They constitute a truly useless movement, or at least the GOP is certainly a useless party, or maybe it's useful only in the sense that it's kind of a controlled opposition.
Jack, do you differentiate between the GOP and the MAGA movement?
No, I don't anymore.
That's new to me. That's new to me, Jack.
Yeah, Alana, right before you came on, David and I were talking, and I said I very recently had this kind of a sobering realization that not metaphysically, not in terms of my personal life or theologically, but politically, it's probably most accurate, I think, to self-describe at this point as kind of a nihilist. I started taking more of this meta perspective on the whole American political culture. And I think I really have reached the point at which I just don't buy any of it. I think it is I do think it makes sense to speak of a kind of uniparty, this kind of single regime, and it's a regime of lies and delusion. And so as far as, MAGA is concerned, no, I think MAGA is, I think it's there's a certain optic to it. I think it has a kind of theatrical value. I don't doubt that on the ground, as far as the base is concerned, there are a lot of people who genuinely believe this. I know that. I'm not accusing them of being fakes.
Jack, do you think that they are co-opted? Because we the deplorable, good people with generally good instincts, do you think they are so co-opted, so ditto-headed, that eventually the thing, sort of converges and is it collapses one on top of the other, the Republican racket and the well-meaning MAGA movement?
Yes, I think that and one of those articles that you two had looked at over the last couple of those anti, GOP articles of mine, I had said that the so-called conservative movement, which would include the deplorables, MAGA, that they are living within a matrix of their own. I do think that there's been a brainwashing. I think Trump is actually very good at that. I'm not saying he necessarily deliberately set out to do this, but he does have kind of a mesmerizing effect on people. And I think that they live within a matrix, that they genuinely believe that it's possible to kind of roll back all of these, left-wing advances. They're genuine, but they're genuinely wrong.
And that's where I thought it was interesting, Jack, in the article that we just saw on the screen. You talk about the fact that potentially Elon Musk, okay, he's the world's richest man, but he's probably done more, or arguably done more, as we see on screen, to thwart the machinations of the wokery by his possible, anyway, acquisition of one of the biggest propaganda channels of all, which is Twitter.
Right.
So in a way, I think you're saying it is possible to fight back, but maybe the battleground is not the GOP versus the Democrats.
Correct. That's exactly right. I think the only way that decent people can realistically expect for any advances to be made on behalf of their cause is to assume control of the media. Why? Well, because it doesn't matter who gets into office. If a Republican becomes president, the media just lies. I mean, this is not an ad hominem attack. This is demonstrably the case.
The big lie. The big, big lie. Yeah.
Lies.
Congressional hearings lead you to impeachment, those kind of lies. Yeah.
Right.
And to war, for that matter.
Right, like we're seeing right now. Mm-hmm. So it's unless and until more people who want to arrest the advances of the excessive left, that's what I call them, not the progressive left, the excessive left, collect their resources and work not just on constructing alternative infrastructure, but in taking control of the big media that already exist, I don't see very much changing. And again, it doesn't matter if Republicans control Congress and the White House. It doesn't matter if most of the governorships are in Republican hands, unless and until they replace those who currently determine the perceptions of American citizens, things are not going to change.
But Jack, don't you think that there's something to the variable is not entirely reducible to the media, that there's something to be said about the Republican, the con oinksters, maybe, their demeanor and their fight. They have no fight.
Yes. I mean,
you very much see that once they start fighting back and punching back, and you're big on that, that things shift. But when you're always meek and mild. I mean, during COVID, every single Republican would prance through the green rooms on Fox and declare, oh, I'm for science. Right. I've vaccinated, but I support the Rube Hicks, right. You know, the Rube Hicks. It is that stance of defeatism. And occasionally, every single person, spokesperson Trump put up there was weak, not intellectual. It wasn't a Malkin. It wasn't a Ann Coulter could have done the job. Once you punch back the whole ecosystem, even the media, because cowards are cowards. You've said that many times in your work.
Right.
Once you have strong arguments based on principles, right. Constitutional principles, natural rights principles. For instance, I mean, with the COVID, the only argument that Republicans were willing to make was, oh, you can have exemptions based on natural immunity.
Right.
And based on religious exemptions. Were they even familiar with the term of bodily sovereignty?
Right.
We only heard that from Greenwald. So what about the issue of argument? The Democrats give it to them. They have the proverbial Melbourne's.
Right.
They go for the punch. They do what they have to for their people. They release the criminals. They've empowered the criminal arm of their party to do business.
Right.
We are just deflated and we don't have the punch.
Yeah, let's remember too, pre-COVID, Trump is the one who pushed for that first step law. So that whole so-called criminal justice reform, was given a huge shove by Trump himself. And so we kind of see that playing out in the blue cities throughout America. But see, Alana just mentioned COVID. Yeah, that's when I think there was no turning back for me at that point. For 2 years, you've had, incalculable damage of all sorts inflicted upon billions of human beings globally. And the GOP, including the conservative influencers, were right on board with it. You had the indefinite suspension of constitutional liberties. You have, what I always called an internment. We were being told not to leave our homes. There was no science involved in any of this. At the very least, you think that maybe Republicans could say now that if and when they take control of the House.
My next question to you, exactly. Has anyone, Jack, articulated these things and said, not on the local level, not on the federal level, not under my watch? And we have the laws. We have the laws.
Right. Or why not? So let's say they may even be able to do this now, but let's just say they can't because they're in a minority. If they regain control of the Congress in November, maybe now they could say, we're going to have congressional hearings. We're going to be bringing in scientists, including scientists whose voices have been suppressed. We're going to talk about what it means to isolate a virus. We're going to find out whether this thing was really a unique virus. We're going to talk about masks. There's been numerous studies done about masks worn by the general public. We're going to have these scientists who have been excluded, who have been alienated over the last couple of years, and now they're going to have their say. So, I mean, let's at the very least like encourage some national debate over this stuff. They haven't even made any kinds of promises like that. They've made promises except that when we take control, we're going to stop Biden from doing what?
Well, you see, this is part of my problem as well with Trump, because Trump was Mr. Warp Speed as well, wasn't he? Right. Trump was the guy who luxuriated in the fact of rolling out an experimental gene therapy and pushing that into people's arms. He was the guy who allowed Fauci to stand beside him. And this is where, Jack, I think your argument's got a lot of legs between you. People talk about the Trump years as some kind of golden era, but actually Trump could have attacked big tech. He didn't. He could have sorted it. There's so much he could have done, and instead he tweeted. I mean, you know,
And he would tweet, and he would tweet and issue threats about what he may or what he may do, what he could do, and all he did was wind up making himself look weak, because shortly after he'd tweet this stuff, Twitter eventually banned him. I mean, they stuck it right up his ass, and just made him look really weak. Right? He didn't do any of that. Now, the Trump years had some positive things, but they were primarily executive orders that were reversed immediately.
You made that very important point in your column, and in fact, I was sort of dreamily believing that in my book on Trump, I sort of put a great emphasis on executive disorders. That was a Freudian slip. creating reality on the ground and an impetus that would become permanent some way with as you put it, with a Congress that was controlled, a Senate that was controlled by Republicans, presidency, gubernatorial scene, everything. That was my hope. But you pretty much put it well about the executive order being a temporary high.
Yeah, and I think that's it.
Yeah, but let me throw a contrary view in. So, okay, fair enough in all of that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's some will say it was Trump versus the swamp. What else could he do? All he could do was use the executive orders. You know, so from 2018 on, So what options did he have? People will say he did his best, and you're not being very magnanimous and not recognizing that.
I would say then what's the point in voting for him? Right. I mean, right now there's all this talk, all this hype about him throwing his hat back in the ring in 2024. If he couldn't clean up the swamp, you know, in 2016 and over the over the course of his presidency, you know, it's not just that he couldn't drain the swamp, so to speak. I mean, when he left, his last year in office was a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one, it was one blow after another. And unfortunately, it wasn't just Trump who was hurt by that. It was millions and millions and millions of people who were hurt by that. So I would say if Trump can't drain the swamp, because I know that's what you hear a lot from people who still can't get over Trump. You know, he was fighting both parties. He had the deep state bureaucracy. Yeah. Okay. And all that's true to some extent. But what's the point in running for office if you're not going to be able to deliver on the goods that you promised?
And if you're going to arm and staff the place with your incompetent children. You know, it was Ivanka and her boy. What's his name?
Jared.
Jared, her houseboy. Who passed who bombed Syria and passed the criminal justice reform, which I wasn't so fussy about because being a libertarian, but I take your point. The other thing, you being a philosopher, I wanted to return the debate to. You mentioned hearings about COVID, the tests, which you were on to, the masks, which I was on to on March 5th. 2020, when I said the only thing that works is the N95, and that was on the CDC, to have a scientific debate. But Jack, you're a philosopher. You know that philosophy is the bookend for data, for empiricism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem with the Republicans. It's always down to the tit-for-tat argument. My scientist is better than yours. They never come back to rights. So yeah. We want to have that debate about my mask is better than yours and a lockdown. Do we want them rather to say lockdowns cannot happen in a free society? Okay, you can fool around with masks, what have you. You cannot take people's businesses. You cannot impede their sovereignty. So don't we fall into the ditto head mindset when we want to have that scientific debate?
Okay, that's a good point. I think ultimately, especially about the lockdowns, I think you're probably correct that it needs to be, it has to be asserted resoundingly, emphatic, unequivocally, that this is unacceptable in a free society, no doubt about it. But now there's so much data out there. It's so overwhelmingly obvious that the lockdowns were really a crime against humanity, and that they weren't effective in the least at arresting the transmission of a virus. So it would be, I think, would be kind of nice to have to hear reputable, distinguished scientists, legions and legions of scientists who were being censored, to be able to give them that space.
So long as Jack, we agreed that even if lockdowns were effective,
yes,
we could have them, right?
Right.
I know that my great grandfather or great great came from Russia during the 1917s when we had the flu. They traveled. No one locked anyone. Some of them died en route. They migrated to South Africa. Lockdowns, you cannot do that. But we've accepted more and more. Yeah.
But is there an even bigger overarching point? When you talk about lockdowns, masks, vaccines for that matter, these were all edicts coming down from the World Health Organization. The same World Health Organization, Jack, I put it to you, which in many ways, they're calling the shots. What happens in Congress, what happens in the UK, it's just theater. It's a Potemkin theater. That's all it is. There is no power there whatsoever. And that's what we saw. A lot of us woke up during COVID because it became apparent that things were being imposed from above, and the intermediaries are the so-called elected politicians. They're just the functionaries in between, Jack, carrying out orders.
Yeah, I think the World Health Organization, though, had issued warnings against the various state governments not to impose lockdowns, saying that it would exacerbate global poverty.
And then that changed. Yeah, but that changed in February, March 2020.
Did that change at some point? Because
they changed their guidance. That's why Fauci was caught off guard. Because if you remember, Fauci originally said, yeah, there's no need for masks. And then he said, oh, yeah, we got to have masks.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, that was within a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but my point to you is that the World Health Organization called the shots then. And as we speak today, the World Health Organization is pushing through a global pandemic treaty, which essentially overrides every state's individual right to do. For example, Alana saying that, there can be no argument in a free society for lockdowns. But you're going to get them, and it's got little to do with your politicians. It's to do with the fact you've all been consumed by these globalists, and people need to wake up to that. What do you think, Jack?
No, and I think that's all accurate, what you're saying. And I just want to make sure that you're both clear that, I agree with Alana, what she's saying, that is just, unacceptable, that there should ever be anything along the lines of what we witnessed in the, Western democracies over the last couple of years.
Fronted by women.
What's that?
Fronted by women. The COVID distaff, COVID cartel is really the tyranny of, but that's for another topic, tyranny of the matriarchy.
The COVID coven, I think we could call
coven,
them.
Yeah.
Coven, led by lovely Jacinda Ardern down in New Zealand.
Jeff, what do you think about Ron DeSantis? Because just yesterday he banned those feral females we're discussing from protesting in front of homes, private homes. He banned that. In other words, he was enforcing a natural right, as far as I'm concerned. These feral females for abortion can't go and disrupt your life on your private property.
Right.
DeSantis did it. He's done some very interesting things in Florida. What do you think about him?
I do. From what I've seen of Ron DeSantis, I do like him. I think there's a stark contrast between, say, DeSantis and Trump. Whereas, you know, Trump was very flamboyant. Trump, you know, talked a good game, would mix it up with people. DeSantis is just a man of action.
He is.
Right? Yeah. I mean, he's not particularly charismatic, doesn't speak a whole lot. But he has gotten some things done, and he has stood his ground, even while, you know, facing a lot of hostility from his opponents. And so I do have respect for Ron DeSantis.
Do you think he would be a better candidate in 24 than Trump?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Now, will he be able to energize the base to the extent that Trump still manages to energize the base? No, I don't think so. Polling suggests that he's not even, you know, remotely close second to Trump, which I think is
it's a shame.
Shame. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe DeSantis isn't ready to leave Florida yet. But the man has definitely acted. And so
against big tech as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has. Yeah. And in actual fact, I think it was Elon Musk who said that he thought that Trump was probably too alienating a character in the way, some of the ways you've identified, Jack, you know. So whilst he maybe turns on the ultra MAGA side of things, he turns off maybe other people that you need to get if you're going to have that sort of necessary consensus.
Well, see, I think see, back when Trump first ran for the presidency, you know, people would complain about his style. And at the time, at least, I thought, no, these are people who are attacking him with all kinds of really malicious, I mean, even like laughable kinds of lies and slander. He's retaliating in kind, you know, that kind of old, right? So it's not that I have any objections to a certain kind of politician pissing off the left. What I have objections to are people talking shit and then not being willing
I loved his tweets. I loved his tweets.
Oh, I didn't think they were mean enough.
Well, I'm saying earlier on, I thought, no, I mean, he's responding to those who are attacking. Okay, you can argue. See, now where I'm at now, I think someone like a DeSantis, I'd prefer someone like that because DeSantis is not a shit talker. He's someone
He also repairs to principle. He often does articulate principles. So I have an affinity with that. Do you know any Republican running currently that has mentioned even remotely stopping financial deplatforming of innocent individuals, maybe using civil rights law for once for whites, conservatives, and unvaccinated? Anything?
No, I mean, I was telling David a little while ago, and, you know, you and I had talked about this a bit over, you know, a year ago. I have since become really kind of a secessionist when it comes to politics. So it's impossible for me to avoid hearing about things here or there. But I make it a point not to really tune in to the media too much. I mean, like, as far as I'm concerned, come this November, I don't plan on voting. I didn't vote last November here. I'm in New Jersey, but the Republican who was in the race against the governor here, you know, came within like a half a percentage point. It was a real surprise to a lot of people, but I have no regrets about not voting for for that guy. I forget his name, because I never heard him make a big deal about what was done in Jersey in the name of combating COVID. And he was campaigning as if none of that had happened, still talking about
the They all are.
So, no, but to my knowledge, no, I do not hear any Republicans talking about what they're going to do to, you know, stop big tech censoring of, you know, of those voices that they deem purveyors of disinformation or misinformation, whatever they're calling it. No, I don't hear that.
And it's strange because the one guy that is potentially doing that is Musk. And yet, it's curious because Trump seems, I mean, Trump's kind of talking down the prospect of Musk actually getting the acquisition. You know, I'm sure you've seen him say stuff like, with all the bots and whatnot, you know, it's ridiculous to pay $44 billion. But as per your article, Jack, I mean, one of the most positive things that could happen would be to totally disrupt that. And it is a big communications channel, however you think about it.
Sure.
And whatever grudge I might hold because I've been banned from it. So there you go. But despite that, if that was made into a communications channel that treated everyone reasonably fairly anyway, that would be a bigger advance than anything else that any Republican's putting forward.
Because that's right.
It's a fundamental thing, isn't it? Yeah,
that's exactly right. You know, and Musk is no conservative. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he self-identifies as a liberal. He calls himself a free speech absolutist. He's also a brilliant business person. So he is, you know, making an investment that he thinks is going to have some kind of return mm-hmm. for him. So, but yet with that one move, again, who knows now whether it's going to come to fruition? But there can't be any downside to it. We'll put it that way. And because that is like the town square, he could affect potentially some really positive change by just allowing voices on there that would have otherwise been banned.
Or shadow banned. I'm allowed in a very small minimum. The other day, I tweeted something out on communism. I know how to trace if my hashtag goes anywhere. For the first time in years, my hashtag went places. So I think what's happening now on Twitter is that they are forensically expunging the evidence of the algorithm.
Yes. I've heard that before.
Yeah. And that's actually where Musk has already made an impact. I don't know if you guys saw the Project Veritas interview with a senior Twitter engineer. I was watching it. So they got this senior engineer working for Twitter, and they did a Project Veritas under their job on him, and he was basically saying, "Yeah, over in Project Veritas, Twitter here on Twitter, we're not interested in free speech. We're kind of communist. We're quite communist-y, and we certainly don't believe in free speech, and we hate the capitalist Elon Musk." And, even exposing that, Jack, for me, That's shining light into darkness. Why couldn't Trump have? Trump was in the White House. He had 4 years to do that. What happened? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Failure. And you know, and Republicans were in control when Trump first came into the White House.
Yeah.
You know, they had promised to repeal and replace Obamacare, if you recall, right? That was a total debacle. That was an embarrassment. They did nothing about big tech. You know, then COVID comes along. Then all the riots in 2020 occur. I mean, nothing. It was just a disaster. And if you both recall, you may recall, I was just talking about this with a friend this morning about maybe 2010, during the 2010 midterms when the Tea Party was starting to take off. Republicans wiped out the Democrats. They regained control of the House. But once they regained control of the House, then it was like, well, we can't really do anything until we have the Senate. Then once they had the Senate, it's like, well, we can't really do anything until we have the presidency. Notice what's going on right now. Everyone's anticipating this bloodbath in November. the one thing no Republican or big conservative influencer is talking about right now is that Republicans won't be able to do a whole lot until they actually have it all. They're not saying that yet, right? Just like the like the Tea Party candidates, mm-hmm. Republicans back in 2010, didn't say that until after they got elected. It's never like, listen, we'd like to do all of this, but we're not really going to be able to do all this until we have it all. They won't say that prior to the election. It's only after the election, when none of the promises come to pass, that then they start making up the excuses. It's the same thing. You just,
locked into this pendulum of national bipolar disorder. That's all it is. Back to your column, which you wrote in 2021 on fraudulence and fear. Remember that. And you wrote there, I want to bring it back to your secession from media, from even from Tucker.
Yes. Yeah. On occasion, I have YouTube on my television. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll see like a thumbnail come up and on occasion I'll click it. But no, I haven't watched Fix News since.
Probably a good policy.
Yeah, probably since before 2020, actually.
So you write there, the writers and talkers of both the big conservative media complex, as well as lesser known libertarians and conservative outlets, inexhaustibly wax hysterical about the impending, and to hear them tell it, imminent leftist apocalypse, all the while making fortunes, achieving fame, and critically supplying their followers with no direction or solution other than to vote for the Republican politicians.
Right.
Can you comment on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that sums it up.
What would you want them? Because you and I often talked and we would speak about, here Tucker brings on this immiserated person, can't get out of prison. They're in prison for a short period because they opened business during COVID. Bail is $20,000. And what would you would often say to me? What would you say to me on those?
Yeah, why can, you know, $20,000 is peanuts for, you know, Tucker or for Tucker and a few of his friends can, I'm sure, easily pull together $20,000 to help someone. There's no effort on the part of any of these people to do anything other than encourage their constituents to vote Republican. I mean, voting Republican is the be all and end all. That really is ultimately the only solution they propose to the malaise that we find ourselves in. And the question I have is, why? First of all, why should anyone vote Republican? Yeah, I mean, we know that the Democrats are a shit show. We know that this is a mess, right? And I'm certainly never encouraging anyone to vote for Democrats. I mean, but the reason I say what I say is because I get published at the outlets which I get published, and I'm not going to reach any Democrat. I'm not going to reach leftists, right? So, like, we know who the left is. My question is, why should anyone who's not on the left or anyone who wants to see some of these leftist excesses arrested, why should they vote Republican? What exactly are Republicans going to do? And they can talk a good game, but show us how you plan on achieving what you say you want to achieve when you tell us what you want to achieve, because I'm still not clear. Absolutely. Are they going to bring some, you know, human rights tribunals for some of these criminals in the bureaucracy, like Anthony Fauci? Are they planning on doing that? I mean, Fauci cannot be allowed to slip away, right? I mean, that's why I'm saying we need to have, we really need to have these televised kinds of hearings where you do have scientists who didn't get the exposure otherwise, finally being brought forth. People need to recognize that, no, there is another point of view of this stuff.
But also Nuremberg trials. What Republican is saying, never again will a medical idiocrat prevent family from holding the hands of a dying person. Never again. Are they saying that?
No, I have not heard anything.
Before I defer to David, one point when cities were burning, and you and I, you know, would commiserate on that. Yep. Cities were burning. Trump brought in the National Guard to guard federal buildings only.
That's right. I remember. Yep, exactly. Remember that, you know, the law and order president, right? The one who ran in 2016 trying to encourage, you know, the blacks of Chicago, places like Chicago, to give Republicans a try, you know, to restore law and order, didn't it restore any kind of law and order to the, you know, the 500 plus American cities that were burning. Didn't happen. Like you said, he protected federal buildings, but there was nothing that happened in the cities for civilians, for citizens. So it was a huge, huge disappointment.
Yeah, a bigly disappointment, as Trump would have called it, a bigly disappointment.
Yes, yeah, yeah, bigly.
I mean, actually, Jack, we have the same position over here in the UK as well. Ultimately, it's a game between Tweedledee and Tweedledum, right. And you can choose a side, but ultimately, you know, you're not going to get what you expect or what you want. You're just being used as basically voter fodder. And I saw it, although, I mean, as I say, I do follow social media pretty closely. And I see all the people at the moment talking about Ultra MAGA and calling Trump the Ultra MAGA King. Have you seen that? The Ultra MAGA King.
I heard Biden refer to him as that.
But Trump is super savvy. Like you said, he's super savvy. He can pick up and he's got this ability. And it resonates really well with the movement, the base. It really does. And that's where DeSantis doesn't have it. But I agree with Alana and yourself. I think that DeSantis would be a more rounded and a better candidate probably in other. But I don't see it happening. I think Trump's going to storm it. He's going to get it. And I don't know where we're going to be. I doubt we're going to be better off. I think America's in trouble. I think the Republic's in trouble. I think all of those things. I think the same over here, you know. So it's strange how, whether you're in the UK or whether you're in the US, you've got the same problem, Jack, the same existential crisis. And being nihilistic about it isn't maybe the worst way to be.
Yeah, no, and I find that when you start to relinquish some of that attachment you have to following politics, you free up space for yourself in your personal life to improve upon things over which you do have control.
Yeah.
We really don't have control over what's going on in the political world. I mean,
never have.
A lot as a writer. I'm a writer. I only occasionally write articles now that are politically oriented. A lot of the stuff I'm writing is more just kind of self-empowerment. Mm-hmm. But as writers, though, you know, we know the therapeutic benefits to come from the writing, right? So it's easy to think that we're going to be like changing minds and hearts to an extent that's going to have an impact. And I think that's largely self-delusional. Right? That's what I kind of had to come to terms with.
Even when we do change, and I have seen over laborious 23 years that I've been doing this, that the best thing someone said to me is, we've learned to trust you. But that's a small group. And even if it were a large group like the MAGA, the intractable structures in place and democracy, which is a topic for another another conversation, that is intractable. That's why your message of moving to self-empowerment, growing relationships, seceding to like-minded communities, I wish we could do more of that. But I don't want us to wrap up, David, before we deal with the anti-white abnegation on part of the, and Jack, you've written extensively about crime and critical race theory, and the Republicans really are the worst on this issue. They'll rabbit on about critical race theory and they'll frame it as Marxism when it's straight out unadulterated anti-white agitprop. And they will only ever mention white suffering in as much as it reflects on the black experience. Mm. So therefore you see the Candace Owens, the Sean Hannity's, the clown at 4 o'clock, Jerry Waters or something.
Jesse Waters.
They will only ever say critical race theory is insulting to blacks. It diminishes their nobility and their ability. Or black crime hurts blacks. What about this thing of they can never defend whites?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I really don't. That's a great puzzle. Why it is that people can't just identify victims for what they are when they're white and when their attackers were motivated by a racial animus. I don't know whether there's just whether they themselves have been so brainwashed by the spirit of the times into thinking that they're going to be blasted the moment they make an allusion to that.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they're worried that, you know, their lines are going to be taken out of context and spun, but yet they're blasted as racist regardless of what they say. I mean, just by virtue of being a Republican, just by virtue of not being on the left, they're going to be blasted as racist. But then again, I mean, even whites who are on the left are blasted as being racist when you start talking about, you know, systemic racism or structural racism, right? So it's ultimately just bullshit. That's am I allowed to curse on this?
Sure, yeah.
Maybe I can curse more. I mean, that's the point at which I've arrived, right? It's that the contemporary, not just the contemporary American political culture, but I guess the political culture largely of the Western nation states is one that only affluence could have begotten. It's because we have the luxury of just trading in these fictions.
And these
illusions that we kind of concocted this sort of game. And that's what I see it as. I was having this conversation with David, Alana, right before you came on, and we were talking a bit about this, you know, mass shooting that occurred in Buffalo, which I have not been tuning into at all. So I don't even know the kid's name. I've been making a point of not getting engaged in that. But you know, I did hear a little bit here and there, and of course, predictably, you know, those on the left are trying to attribute this action to, to right wing rhetoric, and you know, so this that's predictable, right? And of course, those on the right are now saying, you know, that's outrageous. You know, when Bernie Sanders when a Bernie Sanders supporter went looking for Republican politicians to gun down, no one on our side ever blamed Bernie Sanders, right? Or when a black racist supremacist launches this attack on a New York City subway just a few weeks ago, right? No one on our side would say that. You know, that anyone other than the perpetrator is responsible. I said, well, you know, there are, I just recently started thinking about this. There are degrees of responsibility, right? Ultimately, someone who pulls a trigger or sets off explosives, ultimately, yes, that person is morally responsible.
Yeah.
But people don't have these ideas in a vacuum. And Alana, I remember an article you wrote years ago. It was the first time I really started thinking along these lines, is when you had critiqued this commonplace notion that just because a person acts, you know, violently,
that he's mentally ill.
That was it, right? Right. And I think, okay, no, it's these ideas don't percolate in a void. So you know, the shooter in Buffalo, I'm sure, again, I don't know anything about him. This attacker, this black racist supremacist attacker in New York, they were picking up ideas from the culture. All right, so listen, Democrats and Republicans, conservatives, liberals, say the worst things about each other. Now, whether what's being said is accurate or not, that's not my concern. My point is the rhetoric is the rhetoric of war. It is, right? I mean, those on the right are supposed to be a bunch of racists, sexists, homophobes, transphobes. You know, we're supposed to be just, Nazis, fascists, right? White supremacists. And at the same time, those on the right are every day convincing us that the left are a bunch of communists and socialists who want to tear down all of the institutions of the West. They despise Western civilization. All right. So we're talking as if we're mortal enemies.
We are.
We are, but that's right. But we don't then carry that through. That's the problem. We are weak. We should be strong. I mean, we need to, be careful how I put this, but, you know, we do need to, words, as you said earlier, Jack, it's so true. Words count for nothing. Actions count for everything. Judge people by what they do, not by what they say. And when it comes to the Republican Party and generally speaking across the West, so-called alleged conservatism, it's the same problem. They talk a good game, they don't play it. It's that simple. But hey, it's all going to be super duper okay. We've got a black lesbian immigrant as the official spokesperson of Joe Biden. So everything's going to be fine now, going forward. Right. Inspired me. I was moved to tears. I'm sure you were as well, Alana.
Just want to bring it back to something Jack said. You mentioned the language of war, but I think the right still is able to make a process-based argument, Jack. In other words, for example, when the DA, the district attorney of Erie County, I think, who's prosecuting this young man who committed this awful crime, he said, my first duty, he went very publicly, and I was sort of exhilarated. He went very publicly and he said, my first duty is as a prosecutor to ensure due process under the law, to search for truth and to uphold the rights of the defendant as well as the victims, and to ensure that you know that he's innocent until proven guilty. So I got very excited on Twitter and I said, well, how marvelous. A justice in the American system knows the role of the prosecution, which is not the role of the defense. It is different. It's a search of truth and to be an advocate for both sides, never to use the power of the state. I was knocked down right and left, but predominantly left, because they want to make only content-based arguments. In other words, the guy's terrible, kill him. They don't want to, and our system is based on process. And I wondered what you thought about that. That's a weakness we have.
Yeah, well, the only point I was making a minute ago is that there's a kind of schizophrenic character to American politics, meaning the rhetoric is the rhetoric of war. I mean, as far as I can see, I mean, it sounds like both right and left, and I'm using even these terms for lack of a better one, but it seems like political nemesis in America, and I'm just focusing on America right now, speak about the other as if the other is, you know, the greatest existential crisis to the well-being of the planet. Okay, that is the language of war. Now, if you take yourself seriously, then you're going to act on that rhetoric as if you were going to act for war. But when you actually see how American politics plays out, it seems like very much a game, a sport, which is the opposite. I mean, think about it. I mean, it's difficult. And I know I've been going through, I'm kind of like detoxing from it, but I've been doing this over the last couple of years now, so I'm getting kind of better at it. But I know it's very difficult for people who have been political junkies to disengage from it. I do think there's a certain, I think it serves a distraction for a lot of people in our, you know, from attending to stuff in our personal lives. And I also think there's a kind of exhilaration that comes from it. I mean, it taps into just a range of emotions. And so that's why, you know, Trump is a rock star among the base. I mean, he was a celebrity.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Trump knows how to work the camera. So people would prefer Trump in there. I'm talking like Republicans, MAGA. People would prefer Trump in there over, say, a Ron DeSantis, even though, at least at the state level, right, within Florida, DeSantis, I think, has proven to be a more effective governor than Trump ever was a president.
I agree. But, I mean, you're right. Trump knows how to work the camera. And we've worked the camera very hard. And now we're going to have to bring things to an end.
Okay, no problem.
So Jack, first of all, thank you very much for being here. We're just putting up on screen, folks. If you want to get Jack's books, they are available. And we'll put the link below as well so you can find it there as well. But, I mean, there's some really interesting content there, guys. So I recommend that you do that. And
thank you. Give
Jack your support. And Alana, if you want to wrap it up.
Yes. I was dying to ask another question. You won't allow me.
No more time. No.
You're so strict.
Mm. I'm afraid I'm a tyrant.
Okay, next time. Please subscribe. Support our content.
I'm sure Jack will be happy. I'm sure Jack will be happy to come back. And there's other stuff we can talk about. We didn't even get near World War III. So assuming we're still here.
Can I just add, when Jack mentioned war, I think the best words in response to, if you call me a racist, Breitbart said, I will say, fuck you, war. That's my end.
Yes.
Yeah, on that note, wish you well, Jack. Thank you so much for being here. Please come by.
Thanks.
And myself. And we'll catch up with everybody on this platform same time next week.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.